So during Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, we're up to page Kuf Samach Gimel in the Eshkol edition, 8 lines from the bottom, page Shin Pei Dalid in the Zichron Aharon edition. And we'd been discussing the psukim of the Az Yashir, the song that the Jewish people sang when they ascended out of the Yamsuf, out of the splitting sea. And through the description of the song, so we also understood the great miracles that happened when the Jews left Egypt and at the splitting of the sea. And now the Medrash continues and says, Natita yaminecha tivleimo aretz. God, you extended your right hand, and then the earth swallowed up the Egyptians. After the Egyptians were drowned in the sea, so then we have a tradition that the sea spat them out, and all the Jews saw the Egyptians lying there dead, because the Jews were worried. They said, maybe just like we made it out on this side of the sea, they made it out on the other side, and they're going to come around and get us. So God had the sea spit out all the dead Egyptians, and the Jews witnessed them there lying dead next to their feet, and then they gave song. So, Natita Yaminecha, God, you extended your right hand, Tivla'eimo Aretz, and the earth swallowed up the Egyptians after they were spit out onto the dry land, so then they were buried in that land. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'aretz, God said to the earth, Kabeli Uchlusayich et HaChalalim, I want you to accept your citizens, the corpses. Let them come out on the dry land and be buried there. Man is born from the earth, man lives on the earth, and so man should be buried on the earth. So the earth said before God, Ribon kol olamim, master of all the worlds, Hamayim harigu utam, v'hamayim yivlu utam. They were killed by the waters, let the waters consume them. Let them be disintegrated into the water. What do I need them for? Amar la kadosh baruch hu, hapam hazot kabeli et eile. God said, now this time I want you to accept them. Pam acheret, otan shiyu neragin alayich, ani mashlich otam layam. And then there'll be a different time that the people will be killed on the land, and then I'll sweep them out into the sea. There'll be an exchange. Shneimar, as the verse says, Nachal Kishon Garafam, Nachal Kedumim, Nachal Kishon. When in the beginning of the period of the Jewish people entering the land of Israel, so we had the period of the judges. One of the great judges was Devorah, and she led a great military campaign against Sisera, the chief general of Yavin, the king of Chatzor. And in that military campaign, great miracles happened, and the army of Sisera, which was tremendously powerful. Now, we had a very weakling army. Nonetheless, the army of Sisera was destroyed, and then they were in a valley that sometimes was filled with water, sometimes a stream would come through there. And the river of Kishon filled the valley and swept all their bodies out into the sea. And in the song that Devorah sings after that war, Devorah describes how the river washed down the army, washed the army away. So God says, right now with the Egyptians, I want the Egyptians to come out of the water onto the dry land and be buried there. There'll be another occasion when they'll sing song, and there'll be another war when the people killed on dry land will be washed out into the sea. I'll make it up to you. So obviously there's much more depth here. What does the land care? Every day thousands of people are buried in the land, and the land doesn't care. Today that the Egyptians are buried in the sea, are killed in the sea, the land doesn't want to accept them. Well, every person that dies in the sea is eventually swept onto the dry land, unless he's weighed down with weights like bin Laden. Normal people in the sea are swept onto the shore. That's the way it works. What does the land care? So obviously there's deeper meaning going on here, but we'll read the Medrash and take it at face value. And what does God answer the river? God answers the land, don't worry about it. I'll take the corpses of that war and I'll send them out to the sea. So there's much more going on here that maybe we'll explore a different time. Amra lefanav ribono shel olam abshah shelo nehrag le'echad nitararti ba'avuro. So the land still has something to say for itself. It says, God, when one man was killed, when there was the murder of one human being on planet Earth, Cain killed Abel. So then What happens? God comes to Cain and says, where is Abel your brother? Where is Abel your brother? Cain says, Ashomer achi anochi, am I my brother's keeper? God says, Kol demei achicha tzuakim elai min ha'adama asher patecha et piha. I hear the blood of your brother and all his descendants, generations to come, they're all wailing before me from the earth that opened its mouth and accepted your brother's blood. Ve'ata arurata, and now you are cursed with the land. So the land got cursed because it accepted someone that was killed illegitimately. So now the land speaks up and says, when one man was killed, I got cursed over accepting that one man. So if I accept all of these corpses, how much more so? What kind of curses I'm going to get? So again, you have to ask yourself, what's the claim here? That's where one man killed another man. Here, they were killed by God. So again, obviously there's more depth going on here. On the simple level, over there it seems that the land was proactive in concealing Abel's death, because God curses the land over opening its mouth and accepting the blood of Abel. So it seems there was something that the land did that it shouldn't have done, however that works. And over here the land is saying, God, you're asking me to do that all over again, open my mouth and swallow them up. Tivla'eimu aretz. Amra lefanav ribono shel olam ten li shvat yimincha she'en ata tove ota miyadi. So the land said, God, promise me by your right hand that you won't punish me over this. You'll never take me to task over it. You're never going to ask me, why did I do that? So God extended his hand, so to speak, and promised he wouldn't. Shneimah, the verse says, Natita yamincha, only after you extended your hand. And the Medrash is learning that means you took a vow, so to speak, that you'll never hold it against the land. Only then, Tivleim Haaretz, was the earth willing to swallow up the corpses of the Egyptians. Maybe I'll suggest the pshat. Yeah, I'll suggest the pshat. I don't know if this is true, but I think maybe on some level it'll give us some insight into the Medrash. We have a tradition... there are two types of relationship, or at least two, many levels of relationships that we have between the Jewish people and God. Sometimes we're God's servants. We're very distant. We're not so close to Him. But we have to listen. He's the master. Sometimes we're doing what we should do. And God says, I love them. They're my great daughter. They're my great wife. They're my great son. It's a much closer relationship. And sometimes we're way off from what we should be, and we don't deserve anything good, and nonetheless God says, I'll give to them, they're my children. We see it twice during the Exodus. When it came time for the plague of the firstborn, so God makes a declaration, they're my children, so I'll kill the Egyptians and I won't kill them. The second time, when there's the splitting of the sea. What does it say? Malchutcha ra'u vanecha bokeayam lifnei Moshe. Your sons saw your great kingship as you split the sea on their behalf. What was unique about those two moments? In those two moments, God was punishing the Egyptians and in the same punishment saving the Jews. And the Jews didn't deserve it. So Chazal tell us that the angels in heaven said, God, why are you doing this? The Jews are pagans just like the Egyptians. Kill them both. You want to kill, fine, but the Jews deserve to die too. So God says, okay, so I'm going to do this plague, and that's why God had to jump over our homes, so to speak. What do you mean? You came to punish the Egyptians. Why do you have to jump over our homes? Because if I'm killing all those who are pagans, well, the Jews were pagans too. So then God has to jump over, so to speak, force himself to pass over the Jewish home, because the Jewish home wasn't so clean. So God says, why am I doing it? The Medrash says, as God was killing the Egyptian firstborns, he was declaring, there was a heavenly voice declaring over Egypt, Beni Bechori Yisrael, my chosen son is Israel. They're my children. What's unique about a child? Anyone else looks at him, he says he's a bum. The parent looks at him, and he says, oh, he's such a sweet thing. You don't see that he's a bum? Sure, I see he's a bum, but he's still such a sweet thing. There was once a rabbi who was called to eulogize, and he didn't know the person who was deceased. So he comes to the eulogy, and he sees the poor widow standing there. And then he looks at her children. One comes in, and he's got a warden next to him, and he's standing there in shackles. The next one comes in, and he's part of a whole drug gang, and he's coming in with his motorcycle. And each one has their fine characters showing them. And the rabbi walks in, and he looks at the kids, and he looks at the widow, and he looks at the deceased, and now he has to say eulogy. So he gets up there, and he says, if you look at the children, look at this man's children, you could see what an individual he must have been. And the widow is standing there, and she's glowing, because she doesn't see the shackles on her sons. She doesn't see the Harley Davidsons and the gangs. She sees he's such a fine kid. God comes and does makas bechoros. The angels in heaven are protesting. They're saying, God, why? And God says, because I love them, because they're my kids. They're my children. So they don't deserve it, but they're my children. And the second time that that comes to play is at the splitting of the sea. We have a tradition that the sea wanted to cave in on the Jewish people. The angel that's in charge of the sea came before God and said, why? Why are you splitting the sea for them, and why are you dumping the sea on them? So perhaps what the Medrash is expanding on is this thought, that until the earth actively went and swallowed the Egyptians, every other step over here that was supposed to punish the Egyptians and benefit the Jewish people, well, the angels involved protested. They said, why? Well, the Jews don't deserve this. The way they've been behaving, they're no better than them. So this is the earth's protest. The earth says, you want me to swallow them up? Well, then that's like the time I swallowed Abel's blood after the murder, because if you ask me, I'm on the level of angels. We don't understand what you just did, God. We, the angels, don't understand why the Egyptians were killed. So now you're going to tell me I should swallow it? Promise me you'll never hold it against me, because it's illogical to me on the level of angels. And if we'll take it one step further, so the Brisker Rav explains on the Haggadah, on the Pesach Haggadah, he says, there are three levels in this world. There's the level of nature that we live on, and on the level we live on, there are laws of nature. There's gravity, there are earthquakes. We can understand within the system of nature we live in. Then there's the second level. That's the level of angels. On their level, they can understand that it makes sense that if there's a war and there's a machine gun firing and 99 people die and one person saved, well, that person, they know why he's supposed to be saved. But from our perspective, it's a miracle. We don't understand how to make it out. But from their perspective, it makes sense. They can evaluate what people deserve and how nature should play itself out, and things that seem extraordinary to us make perfect sense to them because they have the system. They understand God's system of what's fair and what should happen. Then there's God's level. That's a level above the angels. Where the angels will sometimes say, God, we know the system. We know the merits, we know the demerits. We know what they did right, we know what they did wrong, and based on our understanding, they should be punished. And then God will sometimes say, yeah, but I say different. And that's the third level. And that's a level which we find often in Midrashim. We find it when it comes to the plague of the firstborn. The angels say, why? Why should the Egyptians die and not the Jews? So God says, yeah, you don't understand, I understand. But the idea is, this is above you, this is above the angels. And that's what we stress in the Haggadah, that Hashem personally smote the firstborns of the Egyptians. Ani v'lo malach, we say in the Haggadah. I didn't send an angel to do it, because it doesn't make any sense to the angels. And perhaps that's why the angel of the earth is also protesting and saying, God, you want me to swallow the blood of the Egyptians? Why? Yes. I think that's a certain level of rachamim. I don't think that that's what we generically call rachamim, because the angels understand the generic form of rachamim.
I mean, obviously, their system is based on
I don't know. No, you're there.
They're part of the guided system, right? It's not just
No, you're there.
The malachim is like the malach, right? Is it like, is there a certain level, like well-known malachim, Raphael, Uriel, are they like on the same level as, is there like one level of malachim? Like
no,
levels.
A level.
Level, right? Okay. Like, are these like the highest?
I don't know. So the pasuk says, "Natita yuminchati vlemo aretz." God, you extended your right hand, and only then did the earth swallow the Egyptians. Ven yamin el shvua, and extending a right hand is none other than a declaration of a vow. Shneimaus, the verse says, "Nishba shem bimino bizra uzo." God promises with his right hand and with his arm of strength. Miyad, once God promised, the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them. And when all the kings of the earth heard of the great exodus from Egypt, ukriat yamsuf, and the splitting of the sea, ragezu v'chalu v'alchu mimkoman, they were scared, they were gripped with fear, and they fled. They ran away. Shneimar, as the verse says, Shamu amim yirgazun, the nations heard, and they fled, they ran away. Amar Moshe lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe said before God, Ribon kol olamim, master of all the worlds, ten pachtecha ve'imatcha lehem sheyehe liban ka'evin, ad sheyavru Yisrael et hayam. God, place your fear upon them until we cross the sea. Let that fear continue till we cross the sea, till we cross into the land of Israel, till we cross the Jordan. Shneimar, the verse says, Ad yavor amcha Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu prays and says, God, let them continue being scared. Let them have that recognition of your might till we cross into the land of Israel. Tivyeimo v'titeimo, bring them and implant them. Tivyeimo is lehar kodshecha, bring them to your holy mountain, to Mount Sinai, that they should merit to receive the Torah. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe, bring them to your holy mountain, I'm sorry, as to the Temple Mount. Bring them and implant them. God says to Moshe, Moshe lo amarta tivyeinu v'titeinu. You didn't say bring us and implant us. Moshe, you're not coming? You're talking about the Jewish people and you're saying, bring them, implant them. Ela tibiemo titeimo v'amevi hu amotzi. Amar chayecha kidvarecha ken yiyeh. God says, I promise you got it right. You're not coming. V'olam hazeh atam evi otam la'atid lavo anino teo otam neta emet shelo inatshu ma'al admatam. In this world, you're bringing them, but it'll only be in the next world where I will implant them with permanence, and they will not be exiled again. Shneimar, as the verse says, Untatim al admatam, I will implant them. There will come a time when I will implant them, and velo inachu od ma'al admatam, and then they won't be exiled again. V'omer, and the verse says, Hashem yimloch l'olam ve'ed, God's kingdom is everlasting, and it's only when that recognition of God's everlasting kingdom comes to the world that we will be implanted in the land of Israel without threat of leaving again. Guys, you understand the implications of what we just read? That means that when we're here now, we have no promise that this is going to last forever. Only if we reach the point of recognition, Hashem yimloch lo'olam va'ed, are we guaranteed that when we're here, ve'lo yinachu od ma'al admatam, that we'll never be exiled again. Right now, we're a work in progress. And we have to make sure that it plays itself out correctly so that we remain here with permanence. We don't have any guarantee on that yet. Well, I think the two are intertwined. I think the idea here is the public level, but you can't reach the public level if you don't work on the private level.
I mean, if every single one in there is to believe that one guy doesn't,
No. Pasuk says not. Unless they're aware of it and they could help him, then they choose to ignore him. Then it's a problem.
If the one who does believe and everybody else doesn't believe, everyone would be exempt except him, or?
That's complicated. Depends on his level. Depends on how strong he is. Meaning, during the exile, you had people like the prophet Jeremiah, like Mordechai, who were not exiled with everyone else. They were on a level that they merited that. But you had a lot of other people who were not. They were not on that level, and they were exiled with everyone else. Okay.